Expand your diagnostic and treatment offerings with the Arthrex Nano Experience, which combines patient comfort with leading-edge, extremely minimally invasive technology for optimal patient outcomes. A pioneer in nanoarthroscopy, Arthrex has designed the next generation of needle-scope visualization systems that incorporate high-quality, chip-on-tip, image sensor technology to allow you to diagnose and treat a multitude of pathologies while providing your patient with a customizable treatment experience. Furthermore, Arthrex provides unparalleled surgeon support and resources, including the nanoexperience.com, a patient education website illustrating the features and benefits of nanoarthroscopy. Learn more about this revolutionary patient and surgeon experience and connect with an Arthrex technology consultant at nano.arthrex.com. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to yet another episode of the Nailed It Ortho Podcast. My name is Dr. Cole, and you are tuned into another episode. This time, we are going to talk about our sports citation classics. We have our team here, and they are going to talk about some osteochondral defects. So they're going to go into, they actually do a really nice summary going over an overview of the high yield points of osteochondral defects, some of the things that you need to know before they even talk about the citations and the different papers. So again, a really great episode. If you haven't already, hit subscribe to the podcast. Go and check out the video on YouTube. We'll put a link to that in the description if you like to check that out and you like to see some of the things that they're referring to. But without further ado, let's go ahead and hop into today's episode.
You are now listening to Nailed It, the Orthopedic Surgery Podcast.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back. It's been a long hiatus, but we are back with our Sports Medicine Citation Classics. We're just going to go ahead and get started. The topic today is OCD lesions of the knees and treatment and the current evidence in the literature. So we're going to start off by doing a little bit of background information for articular cartilage defects, specifically in the knee, so you guys have a better understanding of what it is and the different treatment modalities. So Ehab's going to start us off with that.
Awesome. Thank you. So just starting off with the basic science. So talking about the function of cartilage, basically to decrease friction and distribute loads as a weight-bearing surface. There are different types of cartilage, types 1 through 5. A lot of this is OITE review, but essentially importantly for articular cartilage, you have type 2, which is what it's mainly comprised of. You also have fibrocartilage, which is type 1. So fibrocartilage is really made as an injury response. And then it'll be important when we talk about microfracturing and then marrow stimulation. So there are different layers to the articular cartilage. So starting from superficial and going to deep. So first is the tangential or the superficial layer. So these are flat chondrocytes. They're really condensed collagen with sparse proteoglycans. So I put, for those of you following along with the video, so there's an increased amount of collagen and a decreased amount of proteoglycans. And these are really the articular cartilage progenitor cells. In the intermediate layer, you have round chondrocytes, which are oblique and randomly oriented. And this is the thickest layer. And then the deep basal layer has round chondrocytes and columns. And here, the collagen is perpendicular to the joint, and it has the highest concentration of proteoglycans. And then lastly, at the tide mark separates the true articular cartilage from deeper cartilage, and also divides uncalcified from calcified cartilage. There are different classifications of articular cartilage injury, and this will be important when we're talking about different pieces of literature. So the most common ones that you'll see are the outer bridge and the ICRS classification. So for the outer bridge arthroscopic classification system, there are basically 4 grades. And as you go up in grade, you go with an increased damage to articular cartilage, and you also get closer to exposed subchondral bone, with the grade 4 being actually having exposed subchondral bone. And then for the ICRS classification, kind of the same idea. It's really just how much cartilage thickness loss you have. So starting with grade 1, you have superficial lesions, and then getting down to, you know, your intermediate lesions like grade 3, you have greater than 50% of your cartilage depth, all the way down to the calcified layer. And then when you get to grade 4, you have a complete loss of cartilage thickness. So looking at the epidemiology and the mechanism of injury, so articular cartilage defects of the knee happen with about a 5 to 10% prevalence rate in adults who are over 40 years of age. There are two different mechanisms, so focal and degenerative. Trauma is really the most common mechanism, and you can see it especially in osteochondritis desiccans. And then when you're looking at degenerative, you have things like osteoarthritis, meniscal injury, malalignment, and then ligamentous instability, especially with the ACL. And the location of the articular cartilage defect really depends on the etiology. So for chronic ACL tears, you'll see these defects more at the anterior aspect of the lateral femoral condyle. For osteochondritis desiccans, you'll see it more at the posterolateral or the medial femoral condyle. And then for trauma, you really see it at the patellofemoral region. For the clinical presentation, so it's important to think about any precipitating trauma, any localized knee pain, presence of any effusion, motion deficits, and then catching, locking, and instability. So it's important to note that these physical exam findings, while they're all important to note, may be nonspecific. And then you also just want to rule out any sort of biomechanical etiologies. So again, you want to make sure that there's no sort of malalignment. And then you want to just make sure you have a complete exam looking at ligamentous stability as well. For imaging, so radiographs are going to be where you start, even if they are unimpressive. Sometimes you can see these articular cartilage defects, especially on your weight-bearing flexion views, but sometimes you won't be able to. Your CT scan can show you bone loss and especially can show you patellofemoral alignment, but really the mainstay is going to be the MRI. This will allow you to look at the depth, the size of the location, and then also the subchondral bone involvement. For your treatment, so as always, you can look at non-operative versus operative treatment. For non-operative, you're looking at rest, ice, NSAIDs, PT, activity modification, weight loss for more mild presentations. It's important to note that while we do offer injections and some people offer unloader bracings, these are really unlikely to result in the healing of the defect and are more for symptomatic management. And for operative management, you look at debridement and chondroplasty versus reconstruction. And the important factors to consider, which I'm sure we'll cover in some of these papers, are the size, particularly the surface area, the location, the depth, and any displacement of the actual articular cartilage. So the treatment algorithm, and this is just like a general overview, and I'm sure we'll see more nuanced things in these papers, but essentially you can do marrow stimulation, so like a microfracture to stimulate fibrocartilage, debridement, osteochondral autograft transplant or OATS or mosaicoplasty, and then osteochondral allograft transplant. Those last two are especially important when you look at subchondral bone involvement. For larger lesions, for those that are over 4 centimeters squared, again, you look at your OATS, you look at your OCA, and then you start to talk about your autologous chondrocyte implantations, your AC or your matrix autologous chondrocyte implantation or your MACI. Generally, the marrow stimulation is important because it stimulates type 1 collagen, like we said. For O and OCA, it's important to note that you're transferring viable chondrocytes. And then also for your AC and your MACI, it's a two-stage procedure. And your MACI, you're forming or you're helping to stimulate type 1 and type 2 collagen. For patellofemoral defects, there's more of a preference towards AC and MACI. And in general, it's also important to not forget ORIF for hinged or stable lesions. And this last slide is more for people who are following along with the images. So we have a picture of microfracturing, an osteochondral allograft transfer, osteochondral autograft transfer, and then your AC and your MACI on the two bottom slides.
Awesome. All right. Thanks for that. Hope everyone has a better understanding of what we're going to be talking about. So first paper we're going to go over is the isolated osteochondral autograft versus allograft transplantation for treatment of symptomatic cartilage lesions in the knee. Systematic review and meta-analysis out of Columbia and North Carolina. So just some background information that we kind of already discussed is, you know, articular cartilage injuries are found up into 60% of these knees. Present with some pain, swelling, occasional mechanical symptoms like locking and catching. There are multiple treatment options, like you have alluded to, for addressing these lesions, including debridement, microfracture, OATS, allograft or autograft transfer, MACI, AC, indications for an allograft versus an autograft. So the main purpose of the study was actually to compare the osteochondral allograft versus autograft versus allograft for the treatment of symptomatic knee cartilage lesions. So they did a systematic review and a meta-analysis of the current literature where they looked at level one or two studies that had a greater or a follow-up greater than 2 years, looking at clinical outcomes. And they excluded non-knee cartilaginous lesions, allograft or autograft transfers combined with other procedures, animal studies, cadavers, case reports, or non-English studies. They looked at patient-reported outcomes, including the KOOS scoring, HSS, IKDC, Tegner activity, the Lysholm scoring as well. And they used a t-test, chi-square, and force plots for their statistical analyses. So they ended up finding 20 studies that met all of their inclusion criteria, which had a total of 364 autograft transfers and 272 allograft. The biggest results that they found that there's no difference in graft failure. So both had failure rates that were roughly the same. And there was no statistically significant difference across these studies with postoperative patient-reported outcomes. So in conclusion, there's no difference in the patient-reported outcomes regarding these procedures. Both have some favorable outcomes. There was a few limitations from this meta-analysis and systematic review. There was a lot of heterogeneity in subjective and objective outcomes reporting, which is something to keep in mind when you're utilizing patient-reported outcomes. And concomitant procedures were not evaluated. I don't know if you guys had any thoughts on that.
Maybe just noting the concomitant procedures. I mean, it's good that this is an isolated paper looking at this. And I think, as we talked about looking at the different mechanisms for what happens, you have to really make sure that you're not using this to apply for people who have pre-existing ligamentous instability, people who may have any sort of malalignment, any sort of like chronic meniscal deficiency or anything like that, because that starts to become important when you're evaluating these patient-reported outcomes, especially as well as your failure rates. And I don't think we really know, especially for newer procedures, at least newer in the United States, like meniscal transplants, like what that's going to do for these outcomes and failure rates as well. So it's an important paper for a systematic review, but I think we have to pay attention to that.
Yeah, I agree. All right, moving forward, Tyler.
All right, thank you. Let's get started. So looking at microfracture technique versus the OATS in articular chondral lesions of the knee, this study was looking again, like we've talked about, the osteochondral lesions. And there's pretty significant disruption in people's lives from these, from the hyaline cartilage defect. It can be pretty debilitating. And these focal lesions have been shown to reduce patients' quality of life. And they were quoting that it's similar to those who are going to go under a scheduled total knee replacement. However, these lesions tend to occur in patients who are much younger. So it's interesting that how disabling these lesions are, and also they can lead to premature osteoarthritis. So it's pretty significant impact. So there's been several resurfacing techniques to address this issue, and all of them have shown somewhat decent impacts in the short term to medium term. However, there have been no long-term studies. So the purpose of this study was to provide a randomized prospective trial to compare long-term functional outcomes and radiographical outcomes following microfracture and OATS for full thickness chondral lesions of the knee. So the methods of this study, they included 25 patients who were enrolled from in a 6-year time period from three different sites. And they were included if there was verified chondral lesions, grade 3 or 4. And they're showing the grades here on the right if you're following on the video. And they had a very strict inclusion criteria, including the lesion had to be on the femoral condyle or trochlea, had to have an area of 2 to 6 centimeters, and a depth under 10 millimeters. And they were excluded if there were other issues that we were talking about earlier, if there was severe osteoarthritis, malalignment, ligamental instability or injury, or a tibial-sided lesion. So to keep things consistent, across all different sites. When they were doing the microfracture technique, they followed the technique introduced by Stedman et al. And just a brief overview of this. This first included the debridement of all damaged cartilage, and then an awl was used to create microfractures about 3 to 4 millimeters apart. And then the depth was appropriate when fat pearls emerged from the subchondral bone. For the OATS procedure, first they would do a debridement, and then they would take small cylindrical grafts from a minimally weight-bearing periphery, and then transplant them and press fit them into recipient tunnels. And just to control for other confounders, everyone received the same post-operative care and rehab schedules. So in terms of outcomes, they had several patient-reported outcomes, including the lysome score, which is a PRO for cartilage-related knee pain. There's also the KOOS, which is the knee injury and osteoarthritis outcome score. They also measured quadricep and hamstring muscle strength, and then they used the Kellgren and Lawrence criteria for osteoarthritis. And then looking at the demographics of the two groups, the randomization worked really well, and all the participants were in their early 30s, relatively equal split between genders, and had a similar degree of cartilage defects. We can continue on to the next slide. So in terms of outcomes, when looking just at the lysome score, there was no difference between the groups at any time point. But both microfracture and OATS had significant improvement from pre-op to follow-up. But also when you look at the follow-up, they still had lower scores than the uninjured controls that they compared. And if you're following along on the video, that's the gray column there. So definitely improved, but there was no difference between the groups at long-term. We can go to the next slide. And this is kind of like the similar story for all of the other outcomes. So when you're looking at the KOOS score, there's no differences between the surgical groups. However, all of them improved during the follow-up from their pre-op scores. And again, when you look at all of their PRO scores, they break it down by the subcategories for the KOOS pain, KOOS symptoms, quality of life. There is no difference between microfracture or the OATS. And then again, when you look at the muscular strength, looking at the extension peak torque versus flexion peak torque, there was no difference between microfracture or OATS. The potentially, like, one of the most interesting findings of this is that reoperation rates for the microfracture group for later issues was 54% versus 36% in the OATS group. Unfortunately, this was non-significant. So in conclusion, long-term patient-reported outcomes and post-operative strength measures are equal between microfracture and OATS. However, both provided improvement from their preoperative baseline. But across all measures, this was still lower than the referenced uninjured population. However, this study did have a few limitations. While it was randomized, the sample size was pretty small, which I think really limited the power, because there were some trends that seemed to be near significance. And also they were across a few surgical sites. So while they used the same technique, there might have been some variations and differences in experience.
Awesome. Thank you, Tyler. We're going to keep this moving. Up next is the studies, a randomized clinical study of the mosaic osteochondral autologous transplantation versus microfracture for the treatment of osteochondral defects in the athlete. This was a international study out of Lithuania. This was a level one randomized controlled trial that looked at the outcomes of the mosaic type osteochondral allograft transfer and microfracture procedures for treatment of cartilage defects in the knees for these young active athletes. They included patients that had a lesion less than 4 centimeters squared. And they also excluded patients that had concomitant meniscal injury that required some form of repair. Any bony malalignment or patella instability is a contraindication to this procedure, just like how you have mentioned earlier. So they included OCD lesions with size 1 to 4 centimeters squared. They had 60 total patients, 29 underwent microfracture, 28 underwent an Oates procedure. 56% of those had full thickness articular cartilage lesions, and 25 actually had an osteochondral lesion. So the operative techniques that they utilized in this randomized controlled trial was a microfracture technique and then arthroscopic autologous osteochondral transplant, where they use an Arthrex Oates transfer system, where 4.3 millimeter plugs were used, roughly 4.3 plugs were used per case. And these were taken at locations in the knee that were part of the non-weight bearing portion. So they looked at 10-year outcomes. They used this International Cartilage Repair Society scoring system, which utilized a second look arthroscopy, which is pretty interesting, on an average of 12 months post-op. And these are graded as cars with superficial or blunt gaps, superficial cracks, cartilage damage depth less than 50%, and cartilage damage depth greater than 50%, but not reaching the subchondral bone, and then cartilage defects with exposure to subchondral bone. And all of this is done post-operatively. They also used a scoring system utilizing post-operative MRI that looked at the MRI findings regarding the cartilage repair. And that was done at the 1-year mark and the 10-year mark. And then the more well-known Kellgren-Lawrence measurements looking at osteoarthritic changes in the knee. And then all these scores were correlated to each other. So what they found is that both groups had significant clinical improvement according to their ICRS scoring system. They had statistically significant better results in the Oates group compared to the microfracture group. And then they did a subgroup analysis looking at whether or not this is just an articular cartilage lesion or an osteochondral lesion that included the subchondral bone in both of these cohorts. So they looked at 3 and 10 years. The ICRS score showed significantly better results in the Oates compared to the microfracture group. And then the articular cartilage defects had better results compared to the osteochondral defects in both groups. The smaller the lesion size had a significant a clinical significance with a higher rate of return to sport in these young athletes. There was a higher rate of failure in the microfracture group overall, with 38% compared to 14% in the Oates group. 75% of the Oates patients achieved complete filling of their defect versus only 35% of the microfracture. And also to make note of that, when that filling of the defect with a microfracture is a different fibrocartilage compared to the articular cartilage that's on the autologous osteochondral plugs. And then looking at the technical scoring system to evaluate the amount of sporting activity, both had significant improvement, both in the intermediate and long term, with a trend of score to decrease at those points in time. The Oates procedure for articular cartilage defects had better physical outcomes compared to the microfracture. And then the same with the OCD lesions as well. There's no statistical difference in the osteoarthritic changes at 10 years, according to the Kellgren-Lawrence scoring system, and more athletes in the Oates group returned to pre-injury sporting level. There's an overall decrease in sporting activity in both groups. So in conclusion, both the Oates and the microfracture in this patient population, the young athlete demonstrated significant improvement in the long-term clinical outcomes. There was an overall trend of decrease in return to sports activity with the microfracture, having a higher rate of decrease of activity and a higher rate of failure compared to the Oates. And the Oates has been shown to have clinical better results with multiple scoring systems, including the ICRS at the long-term 10-year outcome. So I thought this was a pretty interesting study just because of how they utilized these scoring systems that I wasn't aware of, looking at utilizing postoperative MRIs and second look arthroscopy to actually really take a look at how well this cartilage repairs. You know, that's something that I've never seen. I don't know if you guys have ever seen that, unless there's a reason to go back for a second look arthroscopy if they had another injury of some sort. But it does.
Yeah, I mean, this is an international study. So, I mean, second look arthroscopy is tough in the United States, you know, to justify from a like a logistics standpoint and also, you know, an insurance standpoint. Right. Yeah, a couple things with this. I mean, I think Tyler's paper was kind of the same. It's important to look at the size of these defects. Like all of these have been smaller size defects. And I think we can, you know, all agree based on studying and like looking at the literature, microfracturing works well for these smaller lesions. And then the OATS, I mean, it works well for small lesions, but also tends to work better for these larger lesions compared to the microfracturing. And I think also the point is, and this study actually shows it really well, you know, over that 10-year period, you're trying to see what happens to that cartilage over time. So the fibrocartilage that develops is mechanically inferior to normal cartilage, and it's expected to degrade over time. So that could partly be, or maybe is the main explanation for the findings for the study. But I think it's important to note that microfracturing does work for those small lesions and could fill up those defects, especially for smaller surface areas. But yeah, I agree. It's an important study because of that follow-up and how long it is. And then also using two different modalities of assessing cartilage recovery in both the MRI and the arthroscopy.
Yep. All right, moving on.
All right, so we'll be talking about AC versus MACI, or autologous chondrocyte implantation versus matrix-induced autologous chondrocyte implantation for OCD. Lesions of the knee. This is a study out of England, Royal National Orthopedic Hospital, in about 2005. And so this is a prospective randomized study. They essentially were developing this new technique, MACI, at the time. They've been doing it for about 2 years, but essentially some background on the two techniques was AC started off with actually using more periosteal covers and trying to implement those growth factors and mesenchymal stem cells from the periosteum into these larger defects. But unfortunately, like, they saw these complications like graft hypertrophy, calcification, increased OR time, and some pain that they developed from actually removing the periosteum. And so they started developing new techniques. They started doing a more collagen cover, the ACC, which is, I think, still commonplace, and then MACI, which is more matrix-induced. And these use this collagen bilayer that has chondrocytes seeded into them. And so I think for those of us following along, I have a photo of it coming up. Yeah, so that's kind of what the bilayer looks like. But essentially, they're just trying to see how the MACI compares to this new AC collagen type, because they compared it to the previous periosteal type, found that it had a lower incidence of graft hypertrophy, and that it sort of provided this better overall outcome. And so this is just this sort of scaffolding that is seeded with chondrocytes and collagen. And so these methods, they included patients that were 15 years old to 50 years old, and they had an isolated OCD lesion that was at least 1 centimeter square in size. The patients had to be able to follow rehab programs, and then they included anyone with joint instability or malalignment or bone deficiency as long as it was corrected prior or at the time of implantation. They excluded anyone with OA or inflammatory joint disease. And so this, they kind of selected patients from 2002 up to 2003. They had about 107 patients with three different surgeons, all at the same hospital. 16 of them ended up going and having MACI done. So they had 91 block randomized. They had functional impairment scores pre and post-op, as well as pain scores pre and post-op. The mean age was pretty similar for both groups, with 44 in the ACC group and 47 in the MACI group. Average ages were 33. Most of them had symptoms for, in the AC group, it was average of 118 months. And in the MACI group, an average of 88 months. And prior, they had had both about two surgeries, including a diagnostic arthroscopy. And so the biggest thing I think from their methods is just that this defect size average was 6 centimeters square, which is a lot bigger than we've been talking about prior. And so one of the key things that they really like to talk about is that for their operative methods, the key difference between the AC membrane and the MACI is that you have to cut out the AC membrane. You have to take that, you have to debride the healthy stable cartilage, and then you have to take the AC membrane, cut it to the appropriate size, and suture it in with and use fibrin glue. Whereas with the MACI, you just use the fibrin glue and you place the chondrocyte-seated bilayer down. Otherwise, their post-op was all the same. They put them in full extension with plaster back slab and had them weight-bearing accelerator with crutches afterwards. They had all their follow-ups and they did a one-year arthroscopic assessment like we talked about in Tucker's paper as well. And so essentially, they found that both had pretty well improvements in their Cincinnati knee score or their functional knee outcomes. There was non-significant differences between the two. And that pre-op and post-op, they were very similar, both clinically and arthroscopically. The main thing that they really talked about in the results were what actually caused worse outcomes, which was patients that had symptoms for more than 50 months, patients that had to have that had previously failed an operation, and then patients that were over 35. And so this is kind of reiterating things that we kind of know about a lot of our orthopedic topics, which is if you have symptoms for a shorter amount of time and you get them treated versus if you're younger, you're usually going to heal better more quickly. One of the things that they also mentioned is that they had about 3 cases of MACI complications, which was hypertrophy at 6 months and 2 cases of hypertrophy after 12 months. It was insignificant in terms of their data analysis, but I think it's important to mention, even if it's not statistically significant. And so they did the graft biopsy and the ICRS scales as well on the arthroscopic. And it was pretty similar. At about 1 year, they had still a good amount of fibrocartilage and most of the ICRS grades were in the good range for both groups. And so in conclusion, overall, they found a lower improvement in the functional scores of both of their groups compared to other studies, possibly because they included these joint instability patients, possibly for other reasons as well. And it's important to note that the MACI operation itself is quicker than the ACIC. You don't have to suture in anything. It takes a little bit less time to, because you don't have to harvest anything. But in terms of their limitations, this was really only about a 1 to 2 year study. They had less than 100 patients. And at this point, MACI had only really been around for 2 years in terms of their technique process. And so I think it's, they come up with these techniques for a reason. And I think it's good to know that it's at least not inferior to AC.
Nice. Thanks, Tariq. Ehab, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I'm happy that we had a study that looked at larger lesions. I think it's important. And again, I thought it was interesting that they actually looked at graft histology, even though we looked at MRI and second look arthroscopy for the last paper. It was good to see that they actually looked at the amount of fibrocartilage and the amount of hyaline cartilage that they were finding with their longer term studies. And ultimately, I mean, I think with these, a lot of this depends on your resources from your hospital. A lot of it depends on discussions with your, with your patients. But ultimately, I think these are both good options. And I think we're going to see more research come out of this. You know, articular cartilage defects and just cartilage regeneration is such a big topic right now. So I think it's important to keep looking at these.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's becoming more prominent in both like the adult and pediatric population. I just came off of my pediatric service for the last 6 months, and the amount of either traumatic kind of articular cartilage defects or more like idiopathic OCD type lesions that we treated with a variety of these modalities, microfracture, OATS, even a few MACIs. It's becoming pretty prominent in the younger population. And you know, the whole point of these procedures is to restore our native articular cartilage and trying to avoid, you know, any type of fibrocartilage development or, you know, arthritic changes down the road. And especially in these younger kids, we, you know, that's, there's more of an emphasis on that. So I think there's still a lot of research and improved surgical techniques that are coming out regarding like the MACI and the AC. So it'll be interesting to see what, you know, future literature shows regarding this. And like you have said, it is something that can be pretty difficult to depending your resources, your hospital, insurance, and, you know, patient population, it can be somewhat difficult to kind of navigate those waters. But I think it was a very good discussion, kind of going over the articular cartilage defects of the knee and, you know, the current treatment modalities that we have. You guys have anything else?
No, I agree. I think it's a good discussion, and I think it's something to keep reviewing. I mean, I know we're just at this point coming off of the OITE, but it's something that they like to talk about, and it's pretty algorithmic in terms of the size defect. And I think that's really the thing that they try to go for, as well as some of the basic science. So, you know, these nuances in terms of functional scores and return to play and all these things, I think are important to look at for people who are interested in sports or for people who are interested in, you know, pediatrics. But it's more just this cartilage, like where we are at in terms of cartilage restoration, and the basic science behind it that we should more pay attention to and push forward as people who are watching this podcast or listening along.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate you guys coming on and giving your presentations. We'll figure out a new topic here shortly, and hopefully have an episode produced in a shorter amount of time compared to this last one. Sorry for the delay, but we're going to be better at kind of getting these out more routinely. All right, guys. Well, take care. Have a good night.
We hope you all enjoy listening to that episode. They crushed it. I know that you learned a lot as much as I learned a lot listening to them talk about this. And they all, again, like they crushed it. So if you haven't already, go ahead and share this podcast with one other person. That would help us out a bunch. Go and leave us a 5-star review. Let us know how much you enjoy listening to this episode. And we'll see you all next time.